email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our next guests will be setting sail on the 12th of December from the Canary Islands over to Antigua. They're going to row. They're not really setting sail. They're going to row across the Atlantic. Will you welcome, please? We have Roger McMorrow. How are you doing, Roger? John O'Driscoll. How are you doing, John? And Conor McCarthy. How are you doing? You're very welcome. So give us the dimensions of the boat, John, before we start.
Yeah, so the boat, Ray, is roughly about 1.5 metres wide at the widest part and about 8.2 metres long.
Right.
So quite small.
And this isn't the full team?
No, we have two more. So there's five of us in total. So Enda McNicholas and Derek Kelly as well will be coming on the row.
Okay. 8 metres long. And then there's two compartments either side. So you'll probably have 1.5 by 1.5 each.
It's quite tight.
Not a lot of space.
Yeah, one of the compartments is so small that your legs are actually under the rower, the front row, the rear rowing seat.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually very claustrophobic in there.
Right. And how long will it take you to row 3,000 kilometres, Conor?
5,000 kilometres.
So it's 5,000, is it?
So about 3,000 nautical miles.
Right. Estimating. Oh, sorry, yeah. Can we go into the microphone there?
It'll take us about 35 days.
Right.
It's ballpark. Mother Nature, obviously, is a big factor, but about 30, 35 days.
Yeah, sorry, it's miles. Because I was looking at it, some teams average out about 100 miles a day, and that's 24 hours. Because they don't stop.
Yeah,
they don't stop. Roger.
Yeah, a shift system, so it's a... We'll be rowing in about 4 hour blocks, so about 2.5 hours rowing and an hour and a half break continuously until we get there. And in that hour and a half, you're going to have to brush your teeth, get some food, get your sleep, and get ready to row again.
Yeah. So all of you have done physical challenges before, and we'll talk about them in a moment, but let's do the why first. And John, it's very much about you. And about Saoirse, your daughter, who died in April.
Yeah.
Power of one team, and that comes from Saoirse's strength, is it?
Saoirse's strength, yeah.
Yeah.
Ray, the reason why I'm doing it and the guys rode in behind me, so to speak, was over the years, over Saoirse's life, over 13 years of her life, we did a lot for charity, assisted by Saoirse, and she was part of this journey as well. She was going to be probably my biggest fan on the row, and it was always, I always started this with the anticipation that Saoirse would be there in Antigua for me when I finished the row. But unfortunately, she took on well this year. Her condition of congenital heart disease just steadily worsened, and we found ourselves in Crumlin around the 26th of February, and on the 16th of April we lost Saoirse, unfortunately.
Age 13,
yeah.
Yeah. But you and Aoife knew before Saoirse was born that she had major problems with her heart and other problems.
Correct, yeah. I suppose novice parents, when we started on the journey of parenthood, we were probably a little bit anxious about even conceiving a child, you know, like most people have that difficulty today. We fell pregnant, thank God, very soon, and we were faced in a 20-week scan with the reality that Saoirse had a very complex congenital heart disease. We were initially told that Saoirse probably wouldn't make full term in pregnancy. If she did, it would be an assisted delivery, and that at least 24 hours after, she'd have to have major heart surgery. Now, she astonished us all, even the doctors. When she was born, she was quite stable, even though her heart was very abnormal. It was very stable. It worked. It did what it was supposed to do. So the decision was made. We would take her home. We'd get her as strong as we possibly could. And at 6 months, we'd have elective surgery where Saoirse would come in and have her first major heart surgery, yeah.
And is it the valve or what is it?
In essence, Saoirse's heart was on the opposite side of her body.
Oh, right.
It was turned back to front. And basically, she had two underdeveloped chambers on one side of the heart, along with a myriad of other things. She had a leaking valve in her heart and everything like that. So in essence, Saoirse's function of her heart worked about probably 50% of anybody else's heart would work. She came in and we had our first surgical procedure. Took very unwell after the procedure, unfortunately. And she developed a chylothorax, which was persistent. The body produces a fluid that it couldn't remove itself. So they had to go back in and do a thoracotomy when she had open lung surgery as well. soon after having heart surgery.
But that was the beginning of a lot of surgeries.
Oh, yeah, that was the beginning. Like, I mean, at that point in time, I would say myself and Aoife were told over an 11-week period multiple times she wouldn't make it through. But Saoirse being Saoirse, she was truly resilient. She was an extraordinary little girl and she defied all the odds and came through the surgery.
And 40 surgeries over her lifetime?
Roughly around that, yeah.
And all high risk?
Yeah, so, I mean, even... we talk about surgical procedures. She had the major ones, which was the open heart surgery. She had lung surgery. She had her tonsils taken out, you know, on top of everything else. But yeah, a lot of procedures in the cath lab, which would have involved putting stents in the middle of her heart, closing off collateral veins in the body, all very high risk. Yes, surgical procedures that up to 10 or 15 years ago was an open was in the surgical room and it was open heart surgery, but now a lot of that is done in a cath lab, which is great.
What was she like, Saoirse?
Amazing. I mean, I know if you had every dad in Ireland sitting here, they'd tell you how amazing their kids were, but Saoirse was truly special. I mean, she was absolutely fantastic. I suppose very early on, myself and Aoife, it's probably fair to say we lost Saoirse for the first time when we were told she had a very serious condition because, you know, we were worried about her life expectancy and where that would bring us. So it was very worrying. But the other side of that was knowing that we had a child who was sick. It really focused our attention on being parents and being present, being in the moment. And my wife was very good to always remind me, you know, be here, be present. Let's make every day a fun day. So we always did a lot of fun things around the house. And I think that rubbed off on Saoirse. She was very much the fun in the house. She was the character. As she got older, you know, she was playing pranks on us inside in the house. But she was always causing the epicentre of laughter and fun and joking, which was amazing.
And did she go to school, normal school?
Yeah, so she went to school. She went to Gaelic school. We put her into Gaelic school because they were, you know, very well-funded schools and they had lots of resources and we thought it'd be good for her to learn Irish as well. She struggled with some learning difficulties, which is common for kids who have heart conditions. They have some learning difficulties. Best decision we ever made. It was a fantastic school. She had fantastic support. I mean, she struggled with the everyday things, Ray. I mean, the physical activities in school. When she was younger and smaller, her heart was able to manage. But as she got bigger and matured into a young lady, her heart was under increasing pressure, which was very difficult for her.
And it's never one moment, but that realisation as she matures and is looking around and she realises that she's different to everybody else and she has limitations.
Yeah.
And how did that affect her? And did she verbalise it?
Yeah, I mean, so some of the charities that were raising money for in this role, they were very good to us over Saoirse's.
Heart Children is one of them.
Yeah, they're very good to her over her life, you know. And Saoirse always had support emotionally. She went in to see a person quite frequently in Heart Children Ireland. And I think that was a big help to all of us. But as she reached maturity, as she became a young adolescent, you know, I think myself and Aoife were very much taken back about the next challenge that was in life, and that was the emotional challenge, because Saoirse then started talking about life expectancy. You know, how long will I live? You know, what's going to happen to me in the future? And we always focused on the physical part of it, or at least I did. I always focused on how we'd fix the physicalities of what's going on and what could be done to fix that. I suppose never gave as much thought to the emotional side of it. And when you're talking with a 10-year-old, she was 9 or 10 when we first had a conversation about life expectancy, and she verbalised the fear of dying, you know. And at that point, it's really harrowing to sit there with your child and talk about that, you know. It's like, it's not something that's natural, not something we should be doing as parents, unfortunately.
And how do you do it?
A lot of people have to do it. Saoirse would call me the fixer. She used to always refer to dad as a fixer, and even she used to tell me later on in life, she'd say, I'll give you, you know, some advice that you can't fix everything. You know, she was great.
She was giving you advice.
Yeah, she was mature beyond her years, definitely.
And that happens because they're in the company of adults from forever.
And dealing with adult problems.
Yes.
Like dealing with problems that if I was struck down with them today, I mightn't be able to go on with them, you know. So she taught us a new sense of resilience as a family. She taught us to focus on, you know, other things, the things that we could control. So yeah, it was
that was very insightful.
Very insightful, but it's very difficult to,
because she spotted, you know, because like children don't spot what they're. What their parents are till a lot later. You know, is that the type of work you do?
I kind of would have thought that, but actually I see it differently because I spend a lot of time socialising with our kids and talking to them in a different way maybe to most parents, because they have different lives than we do. So when you actually talk to them about things, it's amazing what they actually do think about. It's amazing how insightful they are. And I only said recently to some people, I think if you listen to your kids, they have a lot to teach us. Not us teaching them, but they also have a lot to teach us too. And Saoirse was definitely that person. Like, hand on heart, Saoirse had taught me more over the 13 years of her life than I could have ever taught her.
And she was in line for a heart transplant. She was put on the list 4 days before she died.
Yeah, so when we told people like Saoirse was ill, it's always the first thing that people jump to. Can you not have a heart transplant? It fixes everything. But taking the procedure of a heart transplant is like going into a cul-de-sac. There's only one way in and one way out. And when you take that process, it comes at a lot of risks. So what they generally do is try and maintain your own heart for as long as possible. And that's what we did with Saoirse through the help of Crumlin and other treatments that were available to us. So when she got really, really sick, she was put on the list, and she was put on the emergency list, as you said, 4 days before she passed. And we were told she was on the list on the Thursday, and we lost her on the Tuesday morning.
Very, very, very sad. Yeah. And she was driving you on. Like, she instigated a lot of the charity projects that your family were involved in.
Yeah, so I mean, my wife in a former life, she worked with the DSPCA.
Right.
And she came home with a picture one day with Saoirse holding a cat. And I said, wouldn't it be amazing if we set up a charity calendar with kids, all associated with kids with heart conditions? As a parent dealing with a child that's got any illness, you feel very lost. Your power to make change is very minimum. All you can do is take them home and mind them. So our way of giving back was to start some kind of a charity initiative. And that's what we did do. And as soon as Saoirse was old enough, she was stuck right in the middle of that. She was right behind it. She would organise the other kids at the photo shoot days. She would check them in the morning, check them out. She would help the photographer set up the staging for the photographs. And we've done that for a number of years, raising over 460,000 over its time. It's still ongoing today. And then on the 40th anniversary of the Dublin City Marathon, I said to Saoirse on New Year's Eve, I said, hey, any plans for, you know, what you're going to do for the new year? Yeah. And she goes, you know what, she says, I think I'm going to run a marathon. So I said, okay, yeah. I said, you know what, we'll do that together. And we did. I bought the buggy, the special buggy.
Yeah.
We trained every day. Like, she would be in the buggy with me doing 8-9 hours training a week. Yeah. Crazy, like, and brilliant. She'd sit there as happy as Larry to go on a run with me.
Yeah.
And I remember that day so vividly. The support was amazing.
Something you said there, John, and it is, it's this helplessness, isn't it? Because, you know, I've spoken to parents before with very sick children, and they would, if they could, swap places. But of course, we can't do that.
Yeah. Oh God, we've had this conversation loads, myself and Aoife, and the two of us, hands down. Everybody knows who's a parent. As soon as they come along, your children come along, you just, this love, this lust for them to have a very happy, jolly life, you know. And like our expectations, like most parents when they first have a kid, you know, they want them to be doctors like Roger or astronauts or, you know, do something that changes the world. Like our expectation for Saoirse was happiness. A long life and happiness. That's all we wanted for her.
Yeah.
So we did all we could.
But she had a happy life.
Yeah, she lived life to the max. She was a great girl. She'd go in and speak to her cardiologist and say, I'm going to Taylor Park on a school tour. Can I go on the roller coaster? She didn't back down from anything. She was really, really was someone truly special.
And we're in it. So it's 7 months. 7 months or thereabouts since she died. And you're doing this. This was planned before she died, as you say. You were hoping that she'd be in Antigua at the end of the journey to welcome you. What's your grieving, obviously? What's going on in your head? And is this a distraction or what is it?
I'd be lying, Ray, if I said to you that, you know, there's comes a few times a week, every week, that I don't want to be here. You know, I don't want to be living life. I don't want to be facing into what I'm facing into. Just generally getting out of bed in the morning is a task. So, yeah, maybe having something to focus on is a good thing. You know, I have my wife first and foremost, and my son, Rain. I have to do all I can for them to be here, to be present, to help him in his life as he grows up. He's had a very difficult start to life too. Like, this is going to define him as a person. And myself and Aoife, very, very early days, made a promise after Saoirse passed that I don't want Rain to look back at his life and think, I didn't just lose my sister, but I lost my mum and dad. Mm. I want him to realise that happiness will be found again someday. Might not be now, might not be today, tomorrow, but it will be here someday.
And did Saoirse ever express how she wanted to be when she was gone?
Not to me.
No.
But she did have a lot of more detailed conversations with her mum.
Right.
Aoife was at home with Saoirse for the last couple of years, and they were extremely close.
Right.
And they talked about everything. And I used to come home at night, and myself and my wife would have the download from the day, and there would be a lot of emotional conversations that happened, like every day, about those things, you know, about life, about, you know, one of Saoirse's big aspirations was to be married, to have her own family. That was one of her dreams. You know, and I talked about it at her eulogy, like, that I never anticipated her bringing into a church that way.
Yeah.
I always anticipated walking her up the aisle and giving her to some undeserving guy, you know.
Very sad. So you don't know these lads that well, or you know some of them well. Is that it? Like, because you're going to be in a boat for a long time and very confined situation under a lot of stress. Do you think it's a good idea?
Do you know what? You know, when you get to a certain age in life, you never anticipate meeting new people that would have an impact in your life. But I've met four very solid.
Right. One of them was a friend, was it?
Yeah, myself and Connor.
Right.
We would have known each other. We have mobile homes in Wexford, and we'd know each other from there. And Connor introduced me to Dara and Enda, who couldn't be here today. And Enda introduces to Roger.
Right. And is Roger essential because he's a medic? Your doctor?
He's definitely essential for lots of different medical reasons. And may all not be physical.
Have you got a speciality,
Roger? I've got a special cocktail for us all.
Are you a general practitioner? Or?
I'm a consultant anaesthetist in St. Vincent's and the National Maternity Hospital. The National Maternity Hospital where Saoirse was
born.
Roger's going to give us an epidural the whole way across.
whose back was out? Would you?
Mine.
You are. So when did that happen?
I ended up with a herniated disc in February, so had surgery just the week before Easter.
Right.
So I thought my race was done, to be honest. But thankfully, I managed to get in, get surgery, and got back training in May.
So you, Connor, and you, Roger, ye like a challenge. So your biggest challenge so far, Connor?
Ultra Trail Mont Blanc is probably the...
What are the details of that?
So it was 180-kilometre ultra race around the Alps.
How long?
It took me 42 hours to get through it and nearly killed me.
Right.
Hence the reason I went looking for another sport.
Of course. And Roger?
Yeah, mountaineering was my background. I've been climbing since I was about 19 and getting higher and higher since I was about 19 when I climbed Mont Blanc. And in 2007, with a medical research expedition, I climbed Mount Everest. It was my fifth trip to the Himalayas. But so we've all got a strong background in extreme endurance challenges. And the other guys who can't be here today have all done, including Connor, done the Marathon de Sable.
Oh, which is I suppose the Marathon de Sable is similar-ish in that there's this monoscape. You know, when you're in the desert, you can't see anything but the desert. When you're in the middle of the Atlantic, you can't see anything but the Atlantic.
Yeah, to a certain extent.
No,
and it's
you haven't even thought of it like that.
No, this challenge is way beyond anything ever any of us have taken on.
Right.
Like 35 days in a boat that small. And I suppose all the things we've done to date, they've been about me and my head for all of us. This is the first time we're really going to have to operate as a team, and our success is going to be how well we operate as a team through the sleep deprivation, the hunger, the wet, the tired, the sore ass, the hands.
Yeah.
And we've got to support each other through all of that and through the ups and downs of it.
I was reading a bit about it. Seemingly it's day three that it kicks in. And it can have a severe effect on your mental health.
Well, we know that, you know, there'll be a lot of excitement the day we leave. Yes. And there'll be euphoria, you'll be well rested, you'll be up for the challenge, and then the reality of the mundaneness of the challenge will settle in. It'll be the first time any of us have been in big seas, because we've done all our training on the Irish Sea, and we won't have experienced the weather and the waves like the size they are. And the other thing psychologically is leaving sight of shore. It'll be the first time we won't have seen lights on the horizon. It'll be the first time we've been, you know, properly alone and still have the rest of the ocean in front of us. All our training on the Irish Sea, it's been actually quite comforting on our nighttime rows to see the lights and the dart going up and down past Bray Head. And you sort of have a comfort of nearness of humanity nearly. It will be very isolating out on the ocean, and I don't think any of us know how we're fully going to cope with it. So I think there will be that down point in about the day 3 to 7 when the reality of what we're doing really sinks in. And
you realise you've another month to go.
he's the forever pessimist. Yeah.
Well, you need a bit of that. Need a bit of that, don't you?
I don't think it's pessimistic. I think it's an absolute privilege. You know, like we have an incredible opportunity, I suppose, really, just to be us, Mother Nature, away from phones and devices and email and work. And it'd be the experience of a lifetime. And obviously we've huge purpose behind it now.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's Saoirse is going to be there constantly, ever present.
And please God, yeah. Please, I'll have, you know, it's we got the boat re-wrapped, or we got it wrapped for the event, and Saoirse is on the side of the boat, and for motivation, and all our kids' names are on the boat everywhere, you know, so it'll remind us why we're there and what we're doing this for. So yeah, it'll be important, you know, because we talked to a lot of people about the row, and everybody has a different opinion of what it is, you know. And I remember one lady saying to me at an event recently, she said, "What time every evening do you get off and get onto the boat for a rest?" And I said, "We leave like a mirror, and we don't see somebody until we land at the other side. It's a fully self-sufficient row. So we desalinate the seawater and we drink that. We use that to make our hydrated food. All our food is on board. If something does happen, we're minimum 12 to 24 hours away from rescue, and it'll be rescued by another ship in a shipping lane. It won't be rescued by a rescue boat that travels along with us.
Yes.
It is completely self-sufficient.
We had the Breen brothers in from Arklow. They've done this.
Yeah, we met them last year.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
right.
In Lagomera, yeah, lovely guys.
And did you haven't had a chance to sit down and ask them their advice, or no?
Yeah, we've chatted to a number of teams, including the Breen brothers.
Right, okay. And what's the recurring theme? What do people say is the biggest challenge of it?
The monotony.
Yeah. So it's the mental thing as opposed to the physical.
It's the mental thing. Like, I think once you get over day 5, day 6, you know, the body does adjust. It's the head then, and trying to keep the head in the game and trying to keep in the moment and stay positive. And it's the smallest things that grate on people. Like, oh, you'll hear that back from all the teams. It's the things that you wouldn't think twice about in day-to-day life. Mm. Really start to grate.
How somebody chews their food.
A particular word they say over and over again.
You know, after themselves.
The
same song is going to be on the radio, you know, whatever it might be. It's they're the things that really grind.
The thing that we can train for is the body, and we've done really well with the training. And I think we actually, for the first time in my life, I feel ready physically for a race. But the psychological and the psychological stress of what we're doing is almost impossible to train other than practice rows, which our longest practice row in the RAC was 36 hours. And it went very well, but we have a very steep learning curve. Every single time we went out, we learned stuff.
I suppose, unlike your other challenges, you have a definite why you're doing this.
Yeah.
You know, it's to keep the memory of Saoirse alive and to raise money for those charities. And how do people donate, John?
So we have a website, Team Power of One. If you go to the website, it'll redirect you back to an I Donate page.
Right.
Plus, we are also looking still for corporate donors. So we have, obviously, an everyday person who might want to just give a couple of euros, or even support Ray by nice messages. You know what I mean? That's a great
team
as well.
Power of one, and that's one, the number one,
the number one. Yeah,
yeah. And you have lovely stories there about the young fella you met in a GAA club.
Ah, yeah. Like I was talking only recently about some of the highlights of the trip and talking to people. I got to go to Saoirse School, and I went to local GAA club as well. And I had about maybe 15 or 20 minutes with a little boy, you know. He was so interested about it, like, and was really focused on the boat and everything we had to do. And at the end of it, he says, wait there. And he ran off and he comes back and he gave me 50 euros. And he said, that's my communion money.
Right.
And it was just absolutely, it was like he could have given me 250,000.
Yeah.
It was amazing that this little guy wanted to donate his own money that he got for his communion to the cause.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
And you got 50 grand then from a donor who didn't want to be named.
Yeah, I mean, it's been huge. Like SMEs, small medium enterprises in Ireland have been very generous to us. We had one guy from Lucan who donated 15,000 euros. It was fantastic. Like, I wasn't expecting it at all from a small
15, family. Not 50.
No, that was one guy for 15.
Right.
And we met another corporation in Ireland, an Irish businessman, and anonymously wanted to donate 50,000 euros. Right. So yes, we've had such amazing support from people. It's been incredible.
And can
on
people
top of that, Ray,
go on? Sorry, Conor.
We've had over 800 people have donated online. You know, so as well as the corporate, there's been just a huge outpouring of support from the GAA club, Crumlin Guards. Last weekend we were in Dundrum on Saturday, so it's been really fantastic the way the public is getting behind us.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck. So you're leaving on the 1st, and then you set sail on the 12th of December from the Canaries, and you're heading to Antigua, and it's 3,000 nautical miles.
Yeah. And we'll have a live tracker up on our website,
great.
So you'll be able to track our progress as we go across via the website as well.
Right.
And we'll hopefully update on the Instagram account. Like, we're hoping to get back some videos and pictures and stuff so people can see the role live, hopefully, as to what's happening.
Yeah, and mind yourselves individually and each other, because there'll be all of that. There'll be the team, and there'll be inside your head as well.
Exactly.
Conor, thanks. Thanks very much, Roger. And John, thank you so much.
Great, thanks very
much.
See you
now.
Thank you.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.